paper I've written, but not yet published. So it's hopefully it's going to appear in the future, soon. So the title is theories blank indefinite causal structure theories with blank causal structure. So I already told you the answer. In the blank, you have the word indefinite, and the letters of the word is scattered inside of this object. In an indefinite order. So the idea is that you can consider this object as a part of a quantum circuit. That's a quantum circuit component. And then the subsystems usually are assumed to have a definite causal structure. For example, if you have a bipartite state, you have the subsystems not causally related. If you have a bipartite transformation, there's an input, there's an output, and the input is in the causal past of the output. So they have definite causal order. But in this kind of circuit, you don't assume any definite causal structure with those subsystems. So that's the whole idea of this object, and also the whole idea of this talk. So I hope to explain to you during this talk why this kind of object is relevant for quantum physics and probabilistic physics in general. Motivations. So why do we consider indefinite causal structure? Major motivation for me is quantum gravity. So in classical GR, there's this classical result that the metric is equivalent to causal structure plus a conformal factor. If you know the causal structure between every two pair of events, and you know the conformal factor at every event on the space-time manifold, then you can reconstruct the metric. This is the reason behind conformal diagrams. For example, you can express the global evolution of a black hole using a conformal diagram, dropping the conformal factor, but only consider the causal structure. Now, that causal structure itself already encloses lots of information about the evolution of the black hole. So here, to make a connection with quantum gravity, we can consider indefinite causal structure because usually in quantum gravity, it's hard to consider how superposition principle apply to space-time geometry. For example, we expect from principles that because all dynamical variables in classical GR, we expect from principles that in a quantum theory, quantum indefiniteness apply to dynamical variables. And then in classical GR, the space-time geometry is dynamical. So we expect to apply superposition principle to space-time. But usually it's hard mathematically to express a superposition of space-time geometry. So the idea here is that I use this equivalence between manifold metric and causal structure. Instead of applying superposition principle to the metric, I apply it to the causal structure. Then this leads to the approach of applying indefinite causal structure to quantum gravity. Now, next motivation, information theory. So this framework of indefinite causal structure not only describes space-time indefiniteness, causal structure, but also operational indefinite causal structure. For example, it's not necessary that the two subsystems of a bipartite state apply to space-like separated regions of space-time. You can have time-like separated regions sharing the bipartite entangled state. So operationally, regardless of space-time structure, you can have an operational notion of causality. And then there are experiments done using quantum optics that demonstrates that there are phenomena we can observe that has indefinite causal structure and causal order. So we would have a framework to express such phenomena. That's another motivation. And then these indefinite causal structure in an operational way can possibly lead to advantages in quantum information processing. And there are existing protocols that show, or at least they claim to show, that such advantage exists, and we can hope for more. So that adds another motivation to the list. And finally, for causal inference problems, the classical theory is well developed, but we hope to also consider quantum effects in causal inference problems. And then that's an additional motivation. So previous works, so Lucien's work opened this subject of indefinite causal structure. The main motivation was quantum gravity, and the causaloid framework offers a general framework to express operational probabilistic theories with indefinite causal structure. And then later on, I'm going to present another framework to express OPTs, operational probabilistic theories. There, I will make another comparison. These works by Liefer and Speckens, they have an epistemic flavor. The main idea is to consider quantum theory as a generalized non-classical probabilistic theory. And these work make use of a generalized tri-isomorphism to try to put state and transformation on equal footing. It turns out that this isomorphism is adopted by later work, and also I make an essential use of that in my framework. This work by the Pavia group in Italy, they offered a proposal for a realizable a quantum circuit that exhibits indefinite causal structure, which greatly encouraged further progress. And finally, these works by the Vienna group, which is closely related to what I'm going to present next, they call it the process framework, which is a general framework to express indefinite causal structure on complex Hilbert space. Now, to give you a sense of how this works in a concrete example, we consider this framework developed in the past. So there are two main inputs to the framework. First, it's an operational approach. Instead of, say, consider causal structure on a mathematical manifold or things like that in GR, we consider causal structure in an operational way. So so we assume that there are local operational regions. And then within each operational region, there is a party, an agent, that has access to lots of different operations. These are labeled by the classical label A. For example, you can consider a spin measurement, and then say spin plus corresponds to one operator. The plus is the A, and then spin minus, the effect of spin minus is another operation. So this this set of M's is not restricted to measurements. So you can consider also state preparation, transformations in general. And then in the most general case, they can also have a classical label. For example, you can consider rolling a dice and then preparing different states according to the result of the dice. And then in this case, the outcome of the dice is the A. And then the mathematical object related to the operation is the tri-state, which is an operator on the tensor product space of the input Hilbert space and the output Hilbert space. Now, the second input of the framework is that we relax the condition of definite causal structure. So suppose there are lots of different regions. Usually, we assume that the different regions have a definite causal structure. For example, Alice is, say, spatially separated from Bob, etc. But in this framework, we drop this assumption. And then we consider probabilities. So in ordinary quantum theory, if you have an operation with inputs and outputs, you can close those inputs and outputs with inputting states and then doing measurements. And for each classical configuration, there should be a probability associated to it. Now here, the W, this blue region, is generalizing those this action of closing the inputs and outputs. So you can, in a special case, you can consider W to be inputting a state to every input system and then closing the output with a measurement. But with this indefinite causal structure setting, it could be more general. So for each configuration, the theory should give you a probability. And in this framework, we assume that this probability assigning map is given in this form. It is a linear map. And then the information of W is encoded in this self-adjoint operator. So the major assumption, mathematical assumption, is that this map is linear. Now, by Reed's representation theorem, any such linear map can be represented as a self-adjoint operator. And then ordinary quantum theory with definite causal structure is a special case in this framework. You just consider a subset of W allowed in the general framework. And then this picture here is to highlight the main idea of this framework, which is, again, as I said in the title page, if you have a bipartite state, you know that these two subsystems, I is not in the causal past of J, J is not in the causal past of I. If you have a bipartite transformation with input I and output J, you know that I is in the causal past of J. However, with this kind of process, which is this blue object, you don't assume a definite causal structure between the subsystems. So the definite causal structure between I and J is not fixed. That's the main idea of the framework. Any questions at this stage? Some applications. So this framework can be used to express superposition of causal order. Now here, you have Alice and Bob, two laboratories. Here you have them in a different causal order. You can superpose them using this framework. And then the process W is expressed through this pure state, small w, which is this. Now the zero, for example, you consider the first branch, this branch, which describes this branch. Now the zero is the controlling orbit, the controlling qubit, which distinguish between this case and this case. And then this phi here is the tri-state of the identity channel. This one goes from C to A1 here. And this one goes from A2 to B1 here. This one goes from B2 to D here. So the other branch is analogous. Now this gives a prescription to describe this process awaiting two inputs from Alice and Bob. For example, you can apply unit trees inside of these colored regions. And then using this solar power. So using this trace, you can connect different regions, compose different regions. And if you close every input and output, that'll give you a probability. Similarly, one can express a superposition of direct cause and common cause structures. Now, starting next, I will talk about my own contribution, which are two parts. So I will first present a general framework for you to express operational probabilistic theories with indefinite causal structure. So take away Hilbert, complex Hilbert space. Question?
Sorry, disappeared. The screen disappeared, but then came back.
And then for the next part, I will identify some principles that single out complex Hilbert space. So what are the motivations to give a general framework? First, one can design experiments to test complex Hilbert space theory.
Do you mean by an operational probabilistic theory being Creel, Quaternion, etc.?
Okay, so an operational probabilistic theory, as its name suggests, has two parts. It's operational because mathematical objects are associated to operations. It's probabilistic because you assign probabilities to different operational configurations. And then there are lots of different cases of operational probabilistic theories. For example, you can consider a theory in real Hilbert space. Then you can consider a theory in quaternion Hilbert space. Yes. Second motivation, one can hope for constructing theories beyond complex Hilbert space in this framework. One can hope for identifying resources for indefinite causal structure. So for example, many processes with indefinite causal structure can be expressed inside of the real Hilbert space itself. And then one can ask the question, what advantages complex Hilbert space brings in terms of expressing the indefinite causal structure? So Lucien had this causaloid framework, which also allow operational probabilistic theories in general. Now, this framework I'm presenting about makes more explicit connection to the graphical circuit framework, the graphical representations, as you saw on previous slides. And also, it uses the process space as a unifying space for states, transformation measurements, etc. Now, what is process space? So this space unifies state transformation effect and other spaces. You don't distinguish among these spaces anymore. They are all special cases of process space. this object on the title page can be viewed as a process. And then you don't know whether this is a state or a transformation at this stage. So the mathematical structure of the process space is that it is first a vector space. The assumption is that there is the linearity structure of operational probabilistic theories motivated by classical mixture. Now, if you have two operations you can perform, you can roll a dice, and then according to the outcome of the dice, mix those operations. And this mixing is linear. That's the assumption that goes here. So for a process, you can consider two processes, then have probability, classical probability weights before those processes, and then they add up linearly, which gives you a vector space structure. Now next, the assumption is that probabilities are non-negative, so you have a positive cone structure. To give an example, in ordinary quantum theory, states are self-adjoint operators. Self-adjoint operators form a vector space. But they're not just self-adjoint operators. They're also positive operators because you want probabilities to be non-negative. So you have a positive cone inside of this vector space. Here, in process space, you also assume that there is a positive cone inside of each process space that's distinguished. That give you a physical description of processes. Now these two assumptions lead to real ordered vector space as the mathematical structure. The vector space is real because classical probability are real. So this framework gives a language to express operational probabilistic theories. An OPT is defined by associating a mathematical object to each operation, and then assigning a probability for each configuration. Here, configuration means having a classical outcome for each operation. For example, you can consider preparing a state in a spin plus state, and then do a unit tree, and then do a measurement in the spin 0, 1 basis, and then consider obtaining the 0 as an outcome. So this whole description gives you a configuration. In a good theory, it should give you a prediction of this configuration. Now further, to associate mathematical objects to operations, you need also to consider composition in addition to individual operations. For example, you can consider two states on two subsystems, then you compose them to form a single state. That should give you another state. That's an instance of composition. And then I assume that this composition obey linearity condition, consistent with the linearity condition in the general framework. By that, I mean the composition map is bilinear in the two inputs. So that finishes the presentation of the framework. An example is complex Hilbert space theory. So here, operations are given by tri-states. And then the composition rule is given by this formula. For example, if you have two processes, each with two subsystems, you can compose them. And the composition law is given by this. You take a partial transpose on subsystem B of capital A, and then multiply those two operators together, and then trace out the system you compose. That should give you a new process, this C, living on systems small a and small c. which is this whole thing. Now, probability comes about also through this composition rule. So for a single system, then this composition rule here reduces to this Born rule here. So summary of the framework. To make a comparison with the framework of processes in complex Hilbert space, there are also local operational regions. Instead of tri-states here, labeled by M, we have here processes P in real ordered vector spaces. And then the rest is similar. One can compose local operations inside of these regions where the parties live through processes. These processes give you indefinite causal structure. Now, there are some remarks to be made about this framework. To keep the framework general, I did not impose the normalization condition. In the ordinary framework, here one assumes that if there is a measurement, say, the operators of the measurement have to sum up to one, to the identity, that gives you normalization. But in this general framework, I do not impose this condition. Also, I do not distinguish between inputs and outputs. Here, this wire has an arrow associated to it. But in the general framework, it disappears. Also, I do not impose no signaling condition, which is often present in operational probabilistic theories. Now, one way to look at these is that because I want a general framework, I do not impose these conditions. But there are also particular reasons for my choice. For normalization, this framework so far is in finite dimensions, but one can imagine going into infinite dimensions, and there do not not imposing normalization might give you an advantage when generalized to infinite dimensions. Right. So now I will talk about the final part of this presentation, which is to identify principles that single out complex Hilbert space. So motivations, why complex numbers? Why complex numbers for quantum gravity? Also, by identifying principles for complex quantum Hilbert space, complex Hilbert space, one can hope to find systematic ways to find theories beyond ordinary quantum theory. Because one can then try to relax the principles and then see what theories one gets. Also, there are some features of quantum theory that can be considered in more general framework for operational probabilistic theories. For example, no cloning. That's not restricted to complex Hilbert space. One can, by identifying principles, hope to see which principles give features such as no cloning. Now, the approach I take is the Jordan algebra approach, which has a long history. So Jordan is, well, maybe not everybody knows, one of the first quantum foundationers very early on in the 30s. He wanted to go beyond complex Hilbert space already. So he set up the mathematical framework of matrix formulation of quantum theory with Heisenberg and Born. And then he realized something peculiar about complex Hilbert space or about the matrix formulation of quantum theory, which is we are only using a subspace of all the matrices. So if you think about it, the observables of quantum theory, they are self-adjoint operators. And then the states of quantum theory, if you view them as density matrices, they're also self-adjoint operators. So it seems that this matrix formulation is not using all the matrices. This suggests to Jordan that maybe the matrix framework as a mathematical framework is not the natural place to formulate quantum theory. And then his idea is that maybe we can distill the algebraic structure of the theory of the observables independently of the matrices to formulate some axioms regarding the algebraic structure, and then look for other mathematical framework that obey the axioms. So the axioms he came up with is Jordan algebra, which is a real Hilbert space with a bilinear product, which is commutative, and which satisfies this Jordan identity. Now, of course, quantum observables as matrices, they're not commutative. So why do the axioms apply? The answer is one take the matrix multiplication rule here and then symmetrize this product to obtain the Jordan product. And then one could check that this Jordan product obey these two axioms. So now Jordan has these axioms. Next step is to look for other structures obeying the axiom. And then these three guys obtained the classification of finite dimensional formally real Jordan algebra as a theorem. So formally real is another technical assumption that's obeyed by self-adjoint operators. And then I do not want to go into the detail because it's not very relevant. But it's reasonable to assume for a physical theory. So they obtained this classification for formally real Jordan algebra. And then the result is that we have these three type of structures. Self-adjoint matrices on real complex quaternionic Hilbert spaces. Spin factor, which I don't want to define in detail because it's not relevant, but the important thing is that it can be embedded in self-adjoint matrices. Third one is self-adjoint octonionic three times three matrices. And that's everything, which is a disappointment to the people because everything here can be expressed using matrices. And their hope was originally to obtain some mathematical structure that's beyond matrices. But that's finite dimensions. One might hope that by going to infinite dimensions, one can find some exceptions. However, later on, it was proved that there are no exceptions. Now, there are two ways to read this disappointment. First way, if you are content with complex Hilbert space, and you want to find principles to support your position, then this classification suggests you a natural route. You just identify some principles for Jordan algebra, and then from there, you identify some other principles that give you complex Hilbert space, then you're done. Now, the other way to read it is that if you're not content with the complex Hilbert space, you might also take this route. So then you can see that there are two places where things can go wrong. One is inside of Jordan algebra. You may not want complex Hilbert space, but want some other structures listed here. Then you relax the principles that identify complex Hilbert space. Now, the other place that can go wrong is when you move into Jordan algebra, so then you can consider relaxing those assumptions. Personally, I'm neutral, so I just list my principles. The proof of mine rely on this reconstruction theorem, which link the algebraic properties of Jordan algebra to the geometric properties of ordered vector spaces. So principles. Now, these principles are quite intuitive, so I express them using pictures. So the first says that if you have a bipartite process, this P, you can either view it as a bipartite state A or view it as a channel N. So the bipartite process space is isomorphic to the state space and also isomorphic to the transformation space. Now this is natural given the framework of indefinite causal structure, because the idea is that if I give you a process, I don't specify the causal relationship between the subsystems. Now the second principle, identification. So in ordinary quantum theory, if you prepare the plus state and then measure it using the projection into the plus state, that'll give you a non-negative probability number. This is a direct generalization to the process framework. Resolution principle. It says that one could at least distinguish some processes. So there exists a process P when it measures some Q, it gives probability number zero. So there exists a process that's not triggered by every other process. Now the assumption is that this vector space is not trivial. It's larger than dimension one. And then homogeneity. So in ordinary quantum theory, the block sphere or the block ball is homogeneous. So there's no preferred region inside of the ball, and then there's no area of the ball that's missing. And then this principle can be generalized to the general process framework. Finally, there's this assumption that there exists a qubit. This serves to exclude classical probabilistic theory, which obey all the four other principles. But that's all the principles. And then here's the proof. So one starts with all the operational probabilistic theories in the framework here, and then one uses identification principle plus the resolution principle to derive self-duality. Now, I don't want to go into the details of the proof. Just this slide is just to give you a general idea of how the proofs work in general structure. And then from self-duality, when you impose homogeneity, that gives you Jordan algebra. And then inside of Jordan algebra, one uses the isomorphism principle and the qubit principle to arrive at complex qubit space. All right, so that's near the end of the talk. Conclusions. What have we done here? So we adopted the operational approach to indefinite causal structure. This approach is independent of the manifold in terms of considering causal structure, which I consider to be an advantage, because in quantum gravity, the manifold structure tend to cause problems. And then we constructed a framework to express OPTs, assuming linearity and non-negativity for probabilities. And then principles for complex qubit space are identified. outlooks. So the first principle, the isomorphism principle, has some non-trivial conceptual meaning. One can interpret it as saying that there is an isomorphism between dynamics and kinematics. So for every dynamical evolution described by a transformation, there is a bipartite, there is a state that's that corresponds to it. And then for every state, there is a dynamical evolution that corresponds to it in an isomorphic way. So now this principle here in this framework is stated in for probabilistic theories. But it may be possible that it's more fundamental. For example, maybe if one expresses GR in a suitable way, one could check that maybe there is also a similar state transformation isomorphism, and that has some potential for future research. Now here, I only identified the principles and to show how one could arrive at complex Hilbert space from the principles. I've not considered particular information processing tasks and what their assumptions are in terms of the principles. One could investigate those questions. One could also relax the principles to see what theories one gets. Also, this framework and the principles and the proof work for finite dimensions. It's possible that they generalize to infinite dimensions. Finally, in the general process framework, space and time is not distinguished. All I give you are some processes and how they compose to give you probability numbers. But there is no notion of space and time. So there are different ways that space and time emerge in this framework. And it's an interesting question, which is the best way to impose this emergence for quantum gravity. I think that's it.
Could you maybe talk a little about how space and time can emerge from?
Yes. So let's consider the difference between a maximally entangled state and an identity channel. So maximally entangled state cannot be used to signal. But if you consider its tri-state. Are you familiar with that notion?
More.
Yes, so it's roughly the same as the tri-state for the identity channel. The identity channel is the tri-state of the identity channel is the unnormalized version of the maximally entangled state. So they differ by the normalization factor. And it is because of this deficiency in the normalization factor that maximally entangled state cannot be used to signal. So for a channel, you can put a state into it. And then if this channel is the identity, then the same state emerges on the output system. Now for the maximally entangled state, the analogous notion is that you do a measurement, say using the plus outcome. And then that steers your state on the other half to the plus state. But then, because you're doing a measurement, there's only a probability that this happens. So that's the difference between maximally entangled state and channel in terms of information processing. They differ by normalization factor. Now, one idea is to talk about this normalization factor in the framework, and then the difference between space and time can emerge.
So in this approach, there's this normalization condition they impose on their operators, which is different according to whether you have a state or a transformation or whatever. But one thing it gives you is a kind of an absolute sort of normalization, whereas you only have relative normalization because you allow your objects to be to have. You know, to keep your properties greater than one. So my question is whether when you do what you're doing, you can always find in there a case where you do have absolute normalization. You just find sort of somehow the maximum probability case and then renormalize relative to that, or whether that's blocked for some reason.
That's possible for finite dimensions.
Okay.
So in infinite dimensions, I'm not sure how that's done. Yeah, so if I have a finite dimensional system, I can always renormalize things. And then, I left normalization as a possibility in this case. One can impose this condition as a further requirement.
Mm-hmm.
My
other question is to do with the fact that you don't have arrows on your legs. How do I understand your first axiom or the first principle you heard, the one with the isomorphism? In what sense, since there's no arrows on those legs in what sense are they sticking out the top or the bottom anyway? Are they just, maybe one could just represent that thing by a circle and have legs? I'm failing to understand what this isomorphism is telling you. Are you mapping between an abstract object which has legs without arrows on them and definite objects which do have causal structure with arrows? Or what's the? Maybe you can just explain that first principle a little more.
Okay.
So
in this framework, a transformation is to be considered as a linear map from elements in the process space to elements in the process space. And then, so this is defined in a different way from elements in the process space. Now, this principle is saying that this linear map can also be viewed as an element in the process space. That's a rough idea.
Could you elaborate on how that isomorphism yields tomographic locality?
On
the slide where you summarized your derivation, isomorphism implies tomographic locality. Could you explain?
So for ordinary quantum theory, one could do a dimensional counting. Did you get it?
No, but I don't.
Okay, so it's basically by just dimensional counting of transformation. So you can count the dimension of a bipartite transformation. And then by this isomorphism, that dimension is the same as the dimension for bipartite states. And then this dimension factors for subsystems.
What is your composition rule?
Hmm?
What is your composition rule?
A composition rule.
How do you compose?
It's a linear, it's a bilinear map. That's it.
That's all?
It's a bilinear map that, for physical processes, that preserve the positive cone structure. Um, for the question.
Are you familiar with the Ancho Olsen tensor product of Jordan Alphabets?
Not familiar, but I just skimmed through the proof. I think, yeah. Right, so I'm here relying on this result, which rely on this result. Here, the result is proved in a setting where no signaling is imposed. Mm-hmm. But then I went through the proof, and it turns out that even if without no signaling, the proof works. And then I think maybe one can ask about the naturalness of the linearity of the composition rule without no signaling. Is that where you're getting at?
I mean, really what I'm getting at is that there's a paper with Barnum and Wells where we have this isomorphism, but we don't have topographic locality.
You have this isomorphism stated in a general setting?
Yeah, in the Jordan algebras.
I guess we can discuss.
So one of your motivations, as was to talk about indefinite causal structure beyond quantum theory. I had the impression that the Vienna group had already done some work in that vein, such as when they derived these causal inequalities. Am I right about that? They did not assume quantum theory to derive those inequalities?
Well, I read about that in the paper with Oreshkov, Costa, Bruckner. And then I think there the given instance in complex event space violates the causal inequality. And then their framework is stated in the beginning with the assumption that there is a complex event space. So I guess the inequality, maybe it holds for operational probabilistic theories in general, but I haven't considered it.
So the idea is that they have a totally operational notion of what it is to have no indefinite causal structure, and their inequalities are a consequence of that notion. But you're saying they don't have examples of operational theories with a definite causal structure beyond the quantum example.
Yeah, I'm trying to remind myself whether the inequality is stated independent of the complex event space. If there's a framework behind this inequality, but I can't recall. I think they did some further work discussing separable and non-separable, causally separable and causally non-separable processes, and that is just for general probabilistic theories.
Right.
So I guess in terms of separating out processes with definite and indefinite causal structure, using those inequalities is considered in the general framework. But I don't recall reading constructions of models within OPT framework for indefinite causal structure.
That's what distinguishes what you're doing from what they did. You want particular alternatives to quantum theory.
Yeah, so which structures, which mathematical structures do you have for an OPT, with indefinite growth structure? So here the answer is that you have this ordered vector space. And then actually this work grew out of a work from another direction. I wanted to derive complex Hilbert space quantum theory with definite causal structure. Then later on, I figured that my principles don't rely on definite causal structure. So I gradually relaxed the framework a bit to make it look like what it is at this stage.
So I have another question, which is, do you know if quantum theory maximally violates their causal inequalities? Or is it more like the situation with Bell inequalities where there's the quantum violation and then there's PR boxes.
I think Brookton had an article I haven't read, but discusses analogies between zeros and expound in his indefinite causal structures. But I don't recall that the results.
Do you know the answer to that question, Natika?
I mean, they don't maximally quantum theory doesn't maximally violate positive inequalities. It doesn't reach the logical bound. So,
right.
But you can do that through other probabilistic theories, like more general probabilistic theories. So it's similar to the Bell case in that sense.
There's an example where quantum theory violates the inequality all.
So in the setting in the paper that he was mentioning, under some assumptions. So in the laboratory, you have quantum theory, which is obeyed. But outside the laboratories, you do not. And in that setting, you do violate, like using quantum theory, using the like complex Hilbert space structures. You do violate the causal inequality. But under that assumption that in the laboratory, it is like quantum theory is obeyed.
I mean, they do write down, I think, some sort of a process matrix which can violate it, but they don't know how to realize that process matrix. And because the framework is more general than just standard quantum theory, right? Because you're assuming only local quantum theory, but like locally in each lab you're assuming quantum theory, but you're not sort of assuming in any ordering of things. As far as I remember, I don't think there's like a straightforward interpretation of that process matrix that right now. So it's probably not quantum like in the conventional sense of the word quantum.
So in terms of constructing specific operational models with the definite causal structure, it's kind of a natural target, which would be the analog of Bach's world. So Bach's world is meant to be this operational theory that maximally violates the Bell inequalities. Do we know whether there's an example of a generalized probabilistic theory that maximally violates these causal inequalities?
I don't know if we do. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
You can do it causally.
Yeah,
you can. Doing causally.
So you can define.
Yeah, it's maybe not.
So that would be one example of a theory that your axiom scheme could rule out. Mm-hmm. And then it might be nice to know exactly which axioms does it contradict.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Then you can start playing similar games to what we do in the context of Bell inequalities, where people try to, for example, just come up with some axioms that will constrain the amount of Bell inequality violation directly without going through a full axiomatic derivation of quantum formalism. So you might be able to say, for example, well, if these subset of my axioms hold, then we know that causal inequalities cannot be violated by more than such and such, which I think would be an interesting kind of result.
Can you say anything about
the question of, like, in the process matrix kind of form? It's like they often ask about what
process matrix is there, non-physical, the other
non-physical, physical.
Are you able to compare?
No,
not that.
Which processes are physically, you mean physically realizable?
Yeah, that's
a
good point. I think.
I mean, they just put out a paper
that
it's
the
assumptions.
Which one?
2 days.
Yeah. I think it's hard to determine whether a process is physically realizable.
Like a magical constraint.
I mean, it could be that in the corner of Planck scale, quantum gravity realizes it. And then we don't know how to realize it in the lab.
No, I mean, just purely from the point of view of given your principles, do they rule out something? Do they rule out some of the things that those guys said are possible?
I see. Interesting. I think.
Is this a superset of what they've done, or is this a subset of the non-trivial intersection?
It's more general in the sense that I do not impose normalization. I do not have arrows for the wires. So, in that sense, it's more general. But I'm not sure. if a particular case is going to be considered.
But I don't know. I don't know.
Have you
in a physical way
compared that stuff with yours?
I learned a lot from their stuff.
Okay. Okay.
That's how I developed this framework. In terms of just trying to construct particular processes, I've not tried that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any more questions? Smart, let's thank the speaker again.